Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. The urban theorist Richard Florida, known for his writings on the creative class, among other topics, has long been an advocate of the importance of arts as a driver for economic development. Others have argued that a thriving arts culture is more the reflection of an area's wealth and education rather than a producer. Florida recently wrote a piece in the Atlantic magazine that looked at the relative concentration of working artists in America's 100 largest cities. While the top 10 list of all artists is made up of places you might expect, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, when the list is limited to self-employed artists, Syracuse appears on the top 10 list, along with Buffalo and Albany. One problem: self-employed artists earn far less than artists employed by an organization, averaging in Syracuse earnings of around $11 per hour. Joining me today to talk about this and the art scene as it relates to economic development more generally are Steve Butler and Rita Paniagua. Steve is the executive director of CNY Arts, and he's been on the program before to discuss the cultural plan for the region. Rita is a member of the New York State Council on the Arts, a former director of the Spanish Action League, and is also currently a member of the region's Economic Development Council. Rita, welcome to the program. And Steve, welcome back.
Thank you for having us.
So both of you obviously are close observers of the regional art scene. I was wondering, though, still, were you surprised to see Syracuse on the top 10 lists for self-employed artists among the 100 biggest cities in the country? Steve, did that surprise you?
It didn't actually surprise me. Syracuse has a reputation for being very affordable, and we know from the work that we did on creating the cultural plan that across the region that, according to the Arts Index, which is made up of figures put together through who files IRS and how they earn their money, that at least 1,600 people in the region file with the IRS saying that they make enough from their art that it needs to be recorded as income. So it did not come as a surprise to me.
What do you think, either of you or both of you, what do you think is going on to produce this dynamic? I mean, Steve, you mentioned that Syracuse is an affordable place. There are lots of affordable places in the country. Why is Syracuse showing up on a top 10 list for this?
I think that as per what we see in our most needy communities, we definitely see artists coming in and start to engage in that way with the community members. And I'll give you an example. In the West Side, right now there are three full musical bands that play around. They're doing festivals. They're invited to be at different parties, events, you know, you name it. And these are very people that come here with their families for different reasons. I'll tell you that one of the reasons that one of these artists that I know is because they need help and assistance with one of their children. And they have the best care here in Syracuse. And others are coming in, like he was saying, like Steve was saying, because it's affordable. And these are families with multiple family members. Usually us minorities have bigger families for some reason. And so it's kind of works into how it works out here in Syracuse.
I want to come back a little bit later in the conversation and explore in greater depth the way that art and economic development work in terms of diversity in different communities and also helping in poverty-stricken communities. So I want to come back and explore that a little bit with you. But let me just stick with this overall question. And I wonder, you mentioned the bands, Rita. I don't know if the data was broken out further than what I saw, but is the fact that Syracuse has long been known as a musical hub maybe part of the reason why it showed up?
Well, I think that's a very good point. I think some of what you're seeing in Mr. Florida's comments is that the arts is part of the DNA of the greater Syracuse area. And part of that is because of the 17 colleges and universities that are in our region. So there's always this exchange of ideas, and there's always this fluid population of young people coming into the region. And, of course, we at the Arts Council believe it's our goal to retain a certain portion of those people to stay and work here, including those in the creative sectors.
So when we think about economic development and the arts, I think it's easy to view the arts as something that you do after you've concentrated on what might seem as more immediate economic goals. So tech, high-end manufacturing, service industries, et cetera. And I suppose in some ways the data on the earnings of self-employed artists being lower than those who are employed in an organization would seem to support that view. But I wanted to know how the two of you see the arts as fitting into an area's overall economic vibrancy. I mean, Rita, you mentioned a couple specific stories before, but more generally, how do you see these two things working together?
Well, we know that in every magazine that's, you know, mentioning the top five or ten best places to live in the country, they always include arts and culture as being one of the indicators in terms of, is it a favorable place to live? Will people want to live there? So we know it adds to that dynamic. But I would say that, you know, very briefly, industries come and go. I mean, what was an agriculture base became a manufacturing base. Now we're in the information age. But arts and culture and the heritage of the area remain intact and remain here. So I think in some ways you could actually build a more important brand on arts, culture, and heritage and the region that will bring those new industries in as they come to their zenith and then become passé. As long as you keep the arts, culture, and heritage intact. That's my philosophy.
And Rita, I think you wanted to jump in on this one, too.
Yes, yeah. I think that the arts definitely it's a contribution to the fabric of the community. It's reflective of who we are and how the communities are developing. So I think it's very important to keep that in mind as we continue to build economic development around this, because we all come from different countries, so we have different mindsets of how things should be or are, and the arts, it's always been a great conduit as a learning piece, and which builds the communities. So I think that is very important.
If I could add to that, when we amassed the data for this cultural plan and we got over 7,000 survey responses from the region, which was an incredible number, some of the things that the general public told us were that they expected the arts sector and the arts industry to reflect and honor local traditions. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they expected the arts community to be the bridge builder to new communities and new traditions that were coming into the region. I don't know that a lot of other industries are tasked with that goal in addition to producing their product.
So this is beginning. I'm beginning to connect the dots now and listening to the two of you and thinking about Syracuse, because one of the things that is true about Syracuse is how diverse it is and how many different cultures and backgrounds are represented, particularly because of the refugee community, mm-hmm. but also other groups. And so this, I think, gets at then this question of one way to think about the connection between arts and economic development is kind of the standard one, which is, and I think, Steve, you mentioned this, is, you know, makes it as an attractive place that young people or creative people want to live in. And, you know, just to sort of put this in the starkest, maybe stereotypical terms, you know, the quality of life attractions for engineers and software developers, right, that they want the arts. But it's going beyond that, it sounds like, for the two of you. And I think that's important and gets at the article itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So go ahead, Rita. Yeah, go ahead, Rita. Just going to say that you were mentioning that the growth of the multiculturalism in Syracuse. And as a commissioner of education in the Syracuse City School District, you know, we just had some data come our way recently. There are 80 different languages being spoken in the district.
Wow.
And so what does that mean? So we have, 80 different cultures living in our communities. And these cultures come with, you know, the arts. How best do you integrate with one another through the arts? It's food, music, just entertainment, enjoyment, fun. And so I think that's, you know, one of the biggest roles that in the arts we play.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Steve Butler from CNY Arts and Rita Paniagua from the New York State Council on the Arts. Well, a little more difficult version of this question, perhaps. But in a previous conversation that I had years back with then-Mayor Stephanie Miner, and we were talking about arts and economic development, and we were talking about other kinds of economic development, she was pretty open and upfront about her view that the need for supports of the more traditional kind of economic activity have to come first. And they need to be prioritized. And the arts are important, but they come second. Now, I was just wondering whether in the new city leadership that's come in and the early gestures of support between the mayor and other local leaders back and forth, there's been some reporting of this. Do you see any sort of moment of a new possibility for the conversation about the place of arts and economic development? I'm not trying to suggest that the previous mayor was against it. She wasn't, but she was pretty clear what the priorities were. But, Steve, do you see this sort of an opportunity moment here?
I do see this as an opportunity moment. And first, I the position that the mayor prior took is a very traditional position. And I first want to go on record as saying that, you know, a study done using 2010 data in the heart of the recession showed that 45 arts groups in Greater Syracuse dropped collectively $34 million into the local economy, generated $99 million in peripheral spending, addition to ticket purchases, but people coming in and going to, you know, all of the things that attend going to a cultural event, took care of paying full-time equivalent positions of close to 2,000 employees and supported 3,000 full-time equivalent positions in other sectors that the arts rely on. So when people say to us, you're in the second tier of economic development, I don't know why, because the data actually tells a very different story. And now we have a new mayor who has served on numerous arts boards, which is wonderful. So I think he has a very good understanding and who was very involved in economic development. And I think it is a new day for these kinds of conversations to take place.
And it's not, Rita, I wanted to ask you a version of this question. It's not that the previous mayor shunned any particular kind of groups or neighborhoods. She certainly didn't. But the new mayor has made a point of reaching out and trying to get in the different communities and tried to bring those into his campaign. So do you see that as, in terms of some of the things that you were talking about before with the arts, as, again, another moment of opportunity?
Absolutely. I think that the new mayor has definitely been very clear on the things that he was to undertake. I think that arts, he didn't really mention arts as specific, but if you want to get going back into the community conversation, if you want to get into the communities, it's a great way to create that, to get engaged.
You're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Rita Paniagua from the New York State Council on the Arts and Steve Butler from CNY Arts. And we've been discussing the place of the arts in economic development in light of some new figures on the relative concentration of artists in the city of Syracuse. I have this question that stuck in my head. It's somewhat abstract, but I'm curious to get your thoughts about this. Does art have a certain kind of set of infrastructure needs of its own? And what does the art infrastructure look like? I mean, what does a city infrastructurally have to have for there to be the possibility of artists thriving in it? I don't know if that question makes sense, but if either of you want to jump in on that.
Well, you know, what pops into my head immediately is venues and space to produce and perform and present, whether it's an art gallery, a heritage event, a performance. So venues, which we probably have a pretty, if you think about it, we probably have numerous venues. Is it organized in such a way and marketed in such a way that people can find those? So when you're looking at infrastructure, I immediately kind of go to other like what is there currently, how do we capture the data, how do we make sure people are aware of it.
The physical and the awareness of the physical and the communication.
Right.
Yeah, interesting.
And then the money to rent the space and, you know, to pay for all of those things. Right. But two things that I think are good are would be live workspace in every north, east, west, and south. There should be live workspace for artists so that they can be creating work. Would love to see the city involved in that because, first off, that, you know, provides shelter and brings residents to town. Mm-hmm. But also it creates a kind of synergy where people are talking to each other. And that's truly how great ideas are born and collaboration and projects. I think, you know, the Gear Factory and what's being done on Fayette. Geddes and Fayette is a very good example of that, and I would like to see more of that in throughout the city as infrastructure. There are other infrastructure needs, but
and I would add to that on that same thought, as an ISCA member in the Council of the Arts of New York State, we work a lot in preserving and expanding the experiences in our communities of this culturalism. Mm-hmm. And so it is very important, as you were saying, that the funding is there to assist our community members to be able to bring their projects to fruition. I think that there are several places where they can go research for funding. But one of the reasons that sometimes we fall a little short is that we don't do a good job in letting people know that this is available to them. And we at NISCA are doing now a different approach, bringing the NISCA employees back into the communities to talk about the resources they're out there. Steve is a huge piece of that. And actually, through the CNY Arts, we do have NISCA funds and state funds that are also put out into the community to help individual artists, groups, and different cultural affairs that partake in our community.
If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guests are Rita Paniagua and Steve Butler. So, Rita, I want to stick with you, and I wanted to circle back to some of the things that you brought up at the beginning of the conversation and ask about art and culture and politics in a way, but politics very broadly considered, not partisan politics, and to think about the role that you see that arts can play in bringing us together. And oftentimes, I think certain art forms, let me just take one, for example, opera, could probably be seen by many to serve more to underline and foreground economic differences than to actually bring us together. Maybe you want to take issue with that. I don't know. But is what is the role that arts can play in bringing us together and having us feel that although we are different, we celebrate those differences, there's something important that links us. Tell me, how do you see it? How do you see it working?
So when you mention opera, so when we talk
about... I didn't mean to pick on opera. I just threw it out there.
Okay, so...
Nothing against opera.
No, definitely not. But I was just going to make a point.
Okay.
With the opera, they've been out in the community.
Okay.
And doing little things here and there to get people enticed with that field. And actually... To my surprise, in the West Side, I was there with them when they did that a couple of years back, and it was very successful.
Okay,
the kids were very drawn to it, and I don't know that it brings more people to the opera per se. I don't have those numbers. We could ask, you know, and maybe ask them, and maybe you know about that, Steve. But definitely, there is when we talk about community. Fabric. It's not just the underserved community that takes part of this. There's a layer of the community that all of these professionals are coming from different countries as well, and they're very cultured. And so these are the kinds of things they're probably looking for to integrate as well and be part of something bigger. And I think that is priceless. Definitely the arts is a community building piece, community outreach. In the programs that we have in the different community centers, it is always the arts, the conduit we use to tackle behavioral issues with our teenagers and the little children. And through the arts, different programs as well, even in the school district, you know, we can tell so much about what's going on with the children at a more personal level. It's just one of those pieces that speak to the heart. And I think it's very important that we pursue the development of that.
That's great. Steve, what were you going to add?
Well, you know, when you asked that question, what jumped into my head was Romeo and Juliet, West Side Story, and then, you know, so many stories afterwards. And I think that actually the classics and opera, I think that there are universal themes that once you, you know, invite people in, that they actually do resonate across cultures, these universal themes, and they really do get it. And are inspired by it and go on with it. And I know Rita had mentioned earlier about the funding, and I did want to point out that we, with the New York State Council on the Arts, work very hard to make sure that a certain portion of our funding goes to underserved populations, including inner city, rural, refugee communities. And we're at about 31% of our decentralization funding from the State Council of the Arts goes to underserved populations, and 35% of our decentralized funding through the community arts goes to cities like predominantly Syracuse and Utica, and really is working into those neighborhoods, because I think the other part of infrastructure is access. So when you bring art to that local neighborhood, people can come see it. It's affordable or free. Transportation is not an issue, and they indeed do come when the art is there. As well, through, you know, the county, the leadership at the county has been very good about ensuring that there's arts funding here in Onondaga County, and as well as funding for economic development through the legislature. So,
yeah, and Rita, you mentioned before. One of your examples was the use of art to tap into and understand, I think, and address some of the behavioral issues that school children and poor school districts, poor areas of the city and the school district were having. I'd like to think about that more expansively for a second. I mean, that's intriguing. I mean, what's the role of art to empower or otherwise meaningfully contribute to the poverty-challenged areas of the city, in particular focusing on the poverty-challenged areas of the city? Now, Steve, you mentioned, you know, certain percentages going to different areas, but are there other examples beyond that one that you mentioned that come to mind, or ways to think about that? Because that would really get at something that the city needs help with, right?
Definitely. I'll give you an example of an excellent program that targets that. It's when I was the director at the Spanish Action League, and it's a program that the new director, Elisa Morales, continues to hold at the agency. It's called, well, it's a Spanish name, La Joven Guardia del Teatro Latino. It's a youth theater troupe.
Okay.
And these mostly are children that have no language ability in English. And so through this program, they learn the language, number one, and there's they do homework help. So they through the different activities, right? They learn what they should be, the topics they're going learning at school, and so it helps them do better at school. It helps them with their concentration. It helps them to mediate. It helps them to be more outspoken. It helps them to pronounce better, because one of the things that our kids, when they're at certain ages, they're bashful, you know, because they make fun of them because they're speaking with an accent, you know. And I always tell them, accent is sexy. So utilize that on your favor.
That might be country specific. I'm just thinking. Going around the world, that might be country specific. Anyway.
So you know, it's these kinds of programs just bring the youth, the children to a space where they feel safe. And then when they're comfortable, when their minds are not, you know, agitated by the issue of not knowing of what are they thinking of me, what are they, you know, those kinds of thoughts, then they're ready to learn.
And the confidence level, too.
Exactly. It builds character.
Great example.
Yes.
Steve, do you have anything to add?
Well, I was going to say that, you know, I think overall, I think what happens is, you know, populations that have immigrated here for a variety of reasons through arts programming often find a place of acceptance and feel a sense of ownership. And isn't that really what our community wants? Because we want these people to stay and to have ownership and to stay here and become valuable members of our community. And I think the arts in this regard really does help our neighborhoods. I know in arts education, one of the stats that we talk about is that the chances of getting people into schools is much better on the days when there's arts programming in the schools.
Well, you only have a couple seconds left, but I do want to squeeze this one in. If I think of myself as an artist, and if artistic expression is a meaningful part of my life in Syracuse, where do I go? What do you want me to know? And just in terms of where do I go to find out more, if I want to find out more about what's going on in Syracuse, if you could quickly.
Come to cmyarts.org on the web and find out about all the grants that are available and take a look at the calendar and find out about all the great things that are happening through the six counties that are on using that calendar.
And Rita, what about the communities that you're most familiar with? Yeah.
Yes, I also wanted to add, if you're looking for funding, you can go to the NISCA.org, also website, and they will at this website, you can find information about funding sources. In the community, you just need to visit the community.
Okay.
Exactly. There's centers like the Spanish Action League, one more time, and the Huntington Family Center, and other centers
That's great.
The community.
That's great. Thanks to both of you. That was Steve Butler and Rita Paniagua. Again, thanks to both of you for talking with me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.